The term right to life has instant recognition, especially as far as current events go with the new Congress setting out to defund Planned Parenthood. How about right to death? I know officially it's called physician-assisted death. Others prefer to call it, believe it or not, death with dignity. No matter how it's referred to, its mechanics are still the same, and it's an idea making legal inroads in many states, including here in New Jersey. My first guest today is a doctor and professor who recently wrote a column about the negative medical choices that senior citizens are being increasingly guided toward, while a beneficial option is being discouraged and even overlooked. Along with being a medical professional, she is a board member of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. Thanks for being here today, Doctor.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And you can read her column at aapsonline.org. We've also did a direct link to the article, which is called You're Old, You're Sick, Get Over It. And you touch on 3 points in this article, Doctor, about the urging of Medicare participation, the promises that come along with it versus the financial reality of it. Then you talk about hospice care as well as HSAs, and in the middle, as I said, the physician-assisted death. But let's start with Medicare. As far as a financial stability, how would you rate the current state of affairs with Medicare?
Certainly, and it's not just my rating. The Congressional Budget Office and the Office of Inspector General and various government agencies have all looked at Medicare, and the most generous is that it will become insolvent by 2030, and some say even before that. And this is why it is so important for Congress to look at it and decide what to do about Medicare. And they're looking at ways to improve it and save money. I kind of look at it as looking at us finding ways to get out of Medicare and to take charge of our own health.
Well, especially when you take the two parts of the equation, the growing number of the baby boomers now becoming Medicare age eligible, and the rate of growth of spending for the programs, there's few people. I mean, it's going to be probably a more drastic parallel than Social Security concerns are right now as far as what's coming in versus what's going out.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that points out how inefficient actually the system is in reading the Department of Justice reports daily, they collect millions in fraud, and admittedly, this is only about 5% of the fraud that's out there. When you have something that's that big and that unwieldy, it's very hard to keep track of everything. And we as patients can't just be another cog in the wheel of a giant organization. And it seems to be getting worse and worse in that regard, where doctors are no longer called doctors, they're called providers. Patients aren't patients, they're clients. And this is the kind of dehumanization that leads to, well, they're just another number. We're not really viewed as people anymore in the system.
And again, looking at the numbers, just to compare and contrast, the anticipated or estimated outlays for Medicare this year, 2017, roughly around $594 million. And when you look at 2026, $1.075 billion. Now, it would be nice if maybe the profit realized versus expenditures were reverse order, but as is typical with government programs, yet the more people get in it and we find out how poorly structured it is to stay afloat. And you add to that too, Doctor, as far as something that Medicare has been used as a tool, again, referring to what I said to in the introduction, the prevalence of quick fixes as opposed to long-term care, the Medicare hospice benefit. Boy, that sounds like a great idea. Palliative care, comfort, attention, but it just seems like you're eliminating one thing, treatment.
Well, that's right. The thing that I find fascinating about hospice is how quickly they jump on it. I have a personal experience with that with my mother when she was in her late 80s. She got pneumonia, and the first thing they said is, do you want her on hospice? And the doctor said, oh, she'll probably die in 6 weeks. Well, 2 years later, after enjoying trips and whatnot together, you know, car trips, not like, you know, international flights,
right.
She quietly died. And I was kind of surprised. I think it's a nice idea to have comfort and have nurses come visit you and all this. But one, I think they jump on it a bit quickly. And I'm a sophisticated consumer. I wonder how people feel where they're overwhelmed and they're struck with illness and they don't know what to do. And when that's the first people that jump on you and they're very nice to you, that you, of course, say yes, and you sign a contract right there on the spot. Now, you can always get out of it, but we all know once you opt into things, it becomes more difficult to opt out, whether it just becomes you get comfortable with it, you stop thinking about it, whatever the reasons. We all know that. It's harder to opt out than it is just to sign in.
And I'm not being negative on hospice care. For its initial design of a short-term care and comfort for the extremely terminally ill, 1, 2, 3 months maybe if you have like a drastic case of cancer, but with the fact that so many are thrown out the welcome out of hospice care and they're surviving 6, 9, 12 months, 2 years in some cases, again, it's an expenditure that was not figured into the Medicare equation.
That's exactly right. And certainly when, as you just said, when people think of hospice, you think of someone who's immediately dying of cancer. And certainly in the beginning, most people died within 14 days when they were on hospice. And now, putting people on hospice who have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, congestive heart failure, these are long-term illnesses. And they tend to live longer than what's expected. And who can predict? We can't predict. One would expect someone like Jimmy Carter or Ruth Bader Ginsburg should have passed on by now. My goodness, she had pancreatic cancer, but she's alive and going strong. So how can you predict? What if somebody had put her on hospice? You wonder and you never know, and you can't do a controlled study on a single person.
So Dr. Marilyn Singleton, who has written the column, You're Old, You're Sick, Get Over It, which you can read at aapsonline.org, which is the website for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, which he is also a board member of, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And, of course, the rush for hospice care and the benefit from Medicare has created a rise in the, as they like to call it, death with dignity movement, which here in New Jersey is an actual movement. There is a bill which could possibly come to a vote this coming Monday in the state Senate. It's S-2474, the Aid in Dying for the Terminally Ill Act, which would allow physicians to prescribe medications to terminally ill patients so they can end their own lives. As far as this idea, I mean, is it? It's other states include California, Vermont, Oregon, which have it as existing situations. The insurance companies have denied costly health care coverage to terminally ill patients, and instead they offer life-ending drugs. Is this just a matter of what's it's cheaper to offer them as opposed to care for them?
Well, as cynical as it sounds, let's face it, it is. The more we develop treatments, the more costly they become. Look at hepatitis C treatment. Before, hepatitis C was sort of a slow death sentence, and then they came up with a drug to treat it. The drug is $60,000 a year, which is a bit overpriced, but still, it would be costly even if its price were a bit more reasonable. And when you have choices like this, and people are being funded by the state is going to make some budgetary choices. And that's when you start doing risk-reward. And risk-reward is fine for actuarial workers and when it's numbers, but when it's you somehow probabilities don't matter. The only probability that matters is what your personal probability is. And that's what, there's no way to quantitate, and that has to be up to the individual.
We have a couple of minutes to wrap up with here, but in your column, You're Old, You're Sick, Get Over It, you present a reminder, I think, because this is a easily available program, but from what I've been able to research, very few people take advantage of it, the health savings accounts.
Oh, health savings accounts are one of the biggest boons to medicine. There, before they started, insurers always offered catastrophic health insurance policies that had high deductibles and paid for basically hospitalizations, and you paid for your own little trips to the doctor and whatnot. And this is one thing that was limited by the Affordable Care Act to only people 29 years and younger can get catastrophic policies. I personally had a catastrophic policy my entire adult life. Never used it. You know, knock on wood, never had to go to the hospital. And most people don't get tremendously sick. And yes, you might have an accident, whatever. But even accidents, the car insurance may pay for it. There's no reason to have to buy very high-priced insurance to pay for day-to-day expenses. And health savings accounts just added on to the convenience of a catastrophic policy by being able to put money away tax-free that's earmarked for health, and that would pay your high deductible. Many employers have matching programs, give fund an entire health savings account, and they're a great idea, and we hope that they'll be expanded. They were kind of pushed back under the ACA because the government wanted the tax dollars that were basically shielded by putting your money in a health savings account, but for the patient, it's a fantastic way to pay for various health concerns, and the money really does grow because, again, realistically, most people aren't sick all the time.
This is true. So check with your employer about what they make available as far as their health savings account program is concerned and the potential of a matching fund as well. You'll learn more about this topic that we've been talking about here with our column, You're Old, You're Sick, Get Over It, which you can be found at the website for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons at aapsonline.org. And along with being a medical professional, she is a board member of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.